Good evening, everyone. Let the record indicate it is now 5:06 p.m. The Warwick City Council Finance Committee is called to order. First item is the acceptance of the minutes in a committee meeting held on July 7th.
Move favorable action.
I have a motion. I have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. I am going to go to abatements first. And I would like to hear from the director on that. And before we clear this item, I just want everyone in the audience that is here for PCR 8625, a resolution authorizing the mayor to enter into a tax stabilization agreement with Renaissance Development Corporation for residential purposes, including affordable housing at 1880 Post Road, assessors plat 322, lot 336, will be held to the full council meeting as a public hearing. So I just want everyone here to know that. Director.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Neil Dupuy, Director of Assessing. This month, we have abatements for you in the amount of $33,013.78. These are all exemptions that have been applied and the people qualify for. We are in the appeal process, but there's no appeal decisions in here yet. Those will show up in the next month, but I'll answer any questions that you might have.
Director, if you could just speak like directly into the mic, please. It's
sorry
always,
about that.
Always difficult to hear in this chamber. Any questions from members of the committee? Councilman Muto.
Hi, Director. Mostly clarification questions for you. When it comes to trust and estates, could you clarify for me? For some reason, I was under the impression that trusted estate and estates, because of their categorization, do not qualify for abatements. How do we manage that with the way things transfer through those two?
So there's a state law that requires us to keep the exemption even when they place the property in a trust. It is very difficult then for us to confirm who actually lives there. But unless we know for sure that they've moved out, we do have to maintain the exemption. We will typically, if somebody's in a nursing home, even if it's likely that they're not coming back, we'll keep that exemption in place because that's their one hope, is that they're coming home. We know the reality in some cases, but we are starting something new this year where we're going to ask the people that are holding the property in trust to recertify who actually lives there. There's no legal requirement that they comply, but we're going to ask that they do. And we have the power of the pen. If we choose to, we could take it away and then make them come back in and apply.
Okay. No, that helps. That's helpful. There is one item on the bottom that on item 173083, a tax freeze. Can you explain that?
Waiting for my eyes to adjust here, but
last item on the first page. Well, my first page.
For 1246.38, I believe.
Yes.
So a tax freeze applies for two situations. Either they are 100% disabled, had a household with a dependent, or they can be over 70 and qualify for the tax freeze program. In this case, that property was on with the tax freeze, and because of a deed issue that was recorded, it fell off, and we put it back on after they came in when the bills went out.
And one last question. I noticed through here, reason code 71A, clerical error. Would you give me some examples of what clerical errors are?
So those are errors that I've identified as things that my staff, if we're paying attention, if we have enough edits that we run, we should be able to catch that going forward. One of the problems that we've had is the Munis program itself. Any change to the address or the name will cause a new account number to be generated. So annually, we have probably 200 or 300 properties that fall in that category. Out of 10,000 exemptions, we have to then, they're like orphaned exemptions at that point. They don't fall on any property. So the staff goes through and they put them on a property that they belong to, or they decide that there are no properties that that person owns and they take it away. Sometimes those trusts do come into play and they make the wrong decision. But it seems like every year just before we bill, we have an upgrade to Munis. We're trying to get away from that. And if we can avoid that, we can do more logical edits and hopefully catch all those in the future.
Thank you. That's all the questions I have.
Any other members? Director, there is one item here. It says CB-1000 new app. What is that?
That's a circuit breaker where they qualify for $1,000 off of their tax bill based on their income.
Okay. Are these exemptions that the city offers, are they periodically, if ever, sent out to the taxpayers in the city? We have a whole sheet of different tax reliefs.
Yeah, so it's on our website, number one, but on the back of the tax bill, when they go out annually, we update that information so it stays current.
Point. Sir?
Aren't they also in the calendar that we send out?
I got to claim ignorance on that. I haven't looked at the calendar to that level. I don't live in Warwick, so I don't necessarily. It may be in there, so if they are.
That's a good point, Councilman. If they're not, then perhaps that something could be added next year.
Certainly.
Any other questions from members of the council? Any questions from members of the public? Are there any questions from members of the public? Hearing none?
Actually, one follow-up. I'm sorry.
Sure.
You said that circuit breaker was $1,000 tax, but when I compare it to a line item, it's not $1,000 on the credit, on the abatement.
The one that, this one right here is what I'm talking about.
Okay. Oh, okay. So that number. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
And just to clarify, it's up to $1,000. There are some times where there's a mobile home or a low valued property where the whole tax would be abated. But if it's less than $1,000, then it doesn't get the $1,000 for the exemption.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, I need a motion on the abatements.
Move favorable action.
We have a motion.
Second.
We have a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Public hearing will be to follow. Oh, yes, please. May I have a vote from the committee to move the public hearing to the floor?
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Next item in the bid package, I need a motion for the acceptance of the minutes on July 2nd, please.
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Moving on to PCR 8825, the bid package. The first item we have is item number 2026-121, fire apparatus, and that is found on page one.
Good afternoon, Chief Peter McMichael.
Good afternoon, Chief.
Good afternoon. The fire department has reviewed bid 2026-121 fire apparatus for 1,500 gallon per minute pumper. And after carefully reviewing the bid submitted, the Warwick Fire Department recommends awarding the bid to Greenwood Emergency Vehicles of North Attleboro, Massachusetts. Greenwood Emergency Vehicles met all the specifications as outlined in the bid The requested bid award is for one 2028 E1 Typhoon pumper with a 1,500-gallon per minute pump and 750-gallon water tank. Greenwood Emergency Vehicles is the lowest bidder and did not take exception to any of the specifications. The vehicle will be completed in no more than 36 months after the signed contract, and payment is not due until delivery. And the fire department's requesting spending authority for a one-time purchase in the amount of $896,939. Funding for the vehicle will be from the city's lease purchase account, 499-0450.
Chief, I was happy to hear the other day when we had met that the fire department has gone out for bid on not just this vehicle, another vehicle. And it's quite apparent that that has been productive to the taxpayers. And I certainly encourage that to continue. You know that I've not always been a fan of just sitting back and assuming that the MPA is the best deal. Chief, this $897,000, does that include the lettering and the lights and sirens and everything else that we need on this truck?
It does. It's the total package delivered. So all of those items you just referenced will be included in that pricing.
Okay. In here is referenced and speaks to the various warranties. And some of these warranties go 18,000 miles, I think, on the next item coming up, the rescue. There's some reference to 12,000 miles on these certain warranties. And I think that's very important, obviously. If we exceed the miles before the term, then we kind of own it. So do you have any idea how many non-emergency miles are logged on any of these vehicles in a year, a week, a month?
So we don't classify the miles under emergency or non-emergency use. The only time we would do that would be when we would document the mileage in one of the rescues when taking a patient from the address of the call to the hospital. That mileage will be documented for billing purposes. Other than that, we don't document the mileage for specific use of the vehicle. But I have to comment that I couldn't agree with you more when it comes to the warranty. And in this truck, in all of these purchases that I've come before you for, as far as for pumpers in the past few years, one of the things that we stipulate is a galvanized frame rails. And that's so important because as I've come to before this body in the past with a different manufacturer piece of fire apparatus, we have had issues with framing rotted frame rails in trucks that were as young as 11 years old. And that to me is something that's totally unacceptable considering the money that we're spending on these vehicles. So with not skimping on, if you will, for lack of a better term, the frame rail, we galvanize, which is the best material you can purchase for the frame rails because it's not going to rot and will last the life of the truck.
I asked that question because it is a concern to me with miles that are added on to these vehicles when it's what I consider to be a non-emergency run of the vehicle. These vehicles, they have GPSs in them, right?
Correct.
So mileage could be tracked from the time they leave the barn till they get to point A or point B and back to the barn, right? It could be.
The GPS component for our vehicles is location only and not it's not tabulating the mileage being incurred for that trip. It's GPS only, so our dispatchers can see where the vehicle is. Mainly for when they need to, so that when they need to dispatch, they can identify who's the closest vehicle to a location.
And that's how the GPS works. So in other words, if, let's say a call came in from City Hall that we have an emergency and we need this new pumper, is that what you call it? New pumper to come here. The GPS would produce a route, and it doesn't it show the mileage to that spot as well?
So if you're referring to like an emergency call to this address, that would come up in our CAD system, automatically dispatching who would be assigned here, which would be, of course, from station one across the street.
Mm-hmm. So my point is, I would ask you to keep an eye on non-emergency use, because it does impact the taxpayers, and it impacts them when you exceed the mileage on the warranty, and now the taxpayers have to start footing the bill for these items when it wasn't going to a rescue or an accident or a fire or a drowning or whatever those other mm-hmm. cases may be. Any other questions from members of the committee? Councilman Foley.
First, Chief, a follow-up to Councilman Lattiser. I looked at it. I don't have it memorized. The warranty on this truck, let's just talk this truck, is how many months?
So the warranty for this truck is, the general warranty is 1 year, 24,000 miles.
Oh, all right.
And then it's 25 years for the frame rail, 1 year, 18,000 miles on the electrical warranty.
I have the sheet in front of me. Thank you, Chief.
Oh, you have it? Okay.
All right, so my question, again, a follow-up question. Let's say the last truck we purchased had similar warranty, year miles. It's saying, if I'm reading this right, 1 year or 24,000 miles. Mm-hmm. So not this truck, because we don't have it yet. The last truck we received,
yep.
Do we come anywhere close to 24,000 miles on a pumper in any 1 year? Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. It would really vary between, it'd be a big discrepancy between our busiest pumper versus one of our slower pumpers. So it is possible 24,000 miles on the vehicle if you're doing 4,000 runs a year. If it's a slower truck that might be doing half that, mm-hmm. it's highly unlikely that we would.
My first question actually is, when will we get delivery of this truck? I know in the past we've ordered trucks and it's taken 2-3 years to get the truck.
And we're still at that timetable. So that's a very big problem across the fire service in the country. And it's one of the biggest complaints that you hear from fire departments. Even Congress has started raising these questions because of the push from the International Association of Firefighters, as well as the International Association of Fire Chiefs, that we're still waiting 3 years for a lot of these vehicles. And that's become the norm. And there's speculation as to why that's out there, but we're forced to deal with the reality. And so we're having to plan not for what we needed this year or for next year. We have to plan for 3 years down the road.
And we've asked this question before. That price is locked in.
That price is locked in.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Councilman. Chief, you had also talked about the mileage on and the age of the pumper that we're replacing. You had talked about what happens with the pumper that we're replacing. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Certainly. So when we take a new vehicle and put it in service, ideally would be to replace a vehicle that is between 15 and 20 years old. What we like to do is take that older vehicle and put it in our reserve fleet, so that when one of the frontline trucks is down for either preventative maintenance work or general repair work, we have another truck that's ready to go, so that firehouse will not be without a truck to protect that district. So that that's, in fact, that's the reason why I've come before this body in the past, purchasing some used fire apparatus, because we really didn't have a reserve fleet. And several of our, two of our last trucks that we replaced, those trucks were not able to use as a reserve status because they were decommissioned while they were in front line because of rot or other issues. So ideally, we replace these trucks in a, we'd like to get to the 15-year time frame, and that way we will still get several years possibly out of the older truck that it's replacing by putting that into reserve status.
Okay. There was one other question I had on this truck. I blank out on it. Any other questions from members of the committee? Do we have any? Sir?
Hi, Chief.
Hello.
I do want to congratulate you on the conversation you had with Chairman Lattiser. He was actually very pleased with the answers, and I usually don't get that the day after he meets with you guys, so very good.
Thank you.
A couple of questions for you. Sorry, just had to.
It is what it is.
So, can you talk about, and you've mentioned a little bit, I'm hopping on this capital replacement, operational replacement and usage schedule. Sounds like the fire department has a good handle on their equipment, their capital planning, in operational usage. Can you just share with me how you plan for the future?
Certainly. Well, as I alluded to earlier, when we're seeing 3-year delays in delivery of a vehicle, it puts a department like ours, several years ago, we were in a tough spot where we were borrowing out-of-town vehicles on a daily basis, and not just in one station, but in several. So we went out. We knew we didn't want to come forward and say to the city council, hey, we need 5 trucks right now, right? That is a very big financial burden. So we put a slow, gradual program in place where each year we incrementally added to our fleet, but at the same time, we upgraded our reserve fleet. And so we went out and we purchased used fire apparatus off other fire departments. Some came off other fire departments. Some came off the federal government surplus program, and some came from dealers. But we built up a reserve fleet to get us through the time period to the point to where we are now, where we have a reserve fleet of 5 pumpers, right? And that augments our normal staffed trucks of, which is 9 pumpers. We staff 9 pumpers normally throughout the city. So by a two-pronged approach, if you will, both new, which is going to be a lot more expensive, it'll be worth it in the long run, but we were also, it was kind of the perfect storm where we had the pandemic here as well that caused a slowdown. Well, the pandemic's over with, but we're still seeing 3-year delays on delivery, which is incredibly frustrating. The days of being able to call up one of your local vendors and he might have 2 or 3 trucks ready to go are unheard of now. So it put us in a tough spot because we were trying to upgrade the fleet, but at the same time, we knew that we wouldn't be able to take delivery of a vehicle for 3 years out, which is why we did what we did with the reserve trucks. In the perfect scenario, I shouldn't have to come before you any longer and ask for authority to purchase reserve trucks, because ideally what we like to do is, through proper maintenance, proper preventative maintenance, get the maximum life out of a truck and then put it into reserve status to be used as a backup vehicle, provided that we keep up with and maintain our purchasing of new apparatus. And so I've come before this body every year requesting a pumper and a rescue, a pumper and a rescue. And I think that we'll get to the point where I'll come before this body only for a rescue, because we'll get to a point where we can slow, you know, back off on our purchasing of pumper trucks. As far as the rescues go, that'll be up next, but we can get into that with the next item. That's a different animal. But.
So it sounds like you're getting ahead of it. And the problems we had before COVID, which was a lack of a capital plan, where we ended up with shortages, the plan you're putting in place, the being proactively monitoring this, you feel good about the long-term plans?
Yeah, I think we're in a very healthy position right now.
Awesome. The second question, follow-up question. I have 7 minutes to kill, so that's good. The usage. So one of the questions that that came up was you have a heavy usage fire department, which may be 20,000 miles, and then some less usage of 10. Do you rotate among the stations to average out the life of the vehicles?
We typically do not do that. When a truck is assigned to a station, the crew of that station really form a bond, if you will, with that truck. And they take a lot of pride in their truck, and you can see it when you see it at different events where they have their company, their own personal company logo affixed to the truck. Oftentimes you'll see them have, you know, Lakewood across the windshield, that they go out on their own and purchase a lot of this to show that they have some esprit de corps, if you will, in their truck, right? This is who we are. They take great pride in it. I think it's good for morale, and it's good for the fire department, because when they take great pride in it, then they're taking care of it. And we're getting the maximum benefit out of that because of the pride they take in the apparatus. So if I were to do that, I'm not familiar with any department that does do that, it would kind of be a shot in the stomach to them, if you will, if I started doing that.
No, valid answer. Yeah. Valid answer. Last but not least, and you'll hear me talk about this on several bids going forward, standardization of some of the technology and things that we use for the city. We mentioned GPS, which is the location-based GPS, but in our garbage trucks, we actually have a route GPS system. Is there a reason why the technology is different from city vehicle to city vehicle?
So it's different technology that we're utilizing. I would imagine that the more information it's going to give you, the more of a cost it's going to be for that technology. And I'm not adverse to that. It's just something we haven't moved on yet, but I'm certainly not averse to it.
Okay.
We have a lot of software. As you know, we come before you for a lot of different types of software.
Well, that's what I'm reacted to when you start adding up all this piecemeal software.
Yeah.
And every department has their own thing. There's definitely some operational efficiencies across departments.
Yeah, that would definitely be something that we'd be interested in,
awesome,
in researching more.
All right. Well, I have case studies. I'll be more than happy to share.
All right. Thank you.
All right. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you. Chief, I want to point out also that this truck is about $10,000 below the capital budget you had got approved at the city council, right?
Yes, that's correct. $10,000 less, and it's also $136,000 less than the next bidder was. The next bidder was at $1,033,000.
Right. Which is all reflective of going out for bid.
Yes.
So let's keep doing it. Any other questions from members of the committee? Any questions from members of the council? Any questions from members of the public? Do we have any questions from members of the public? Hearing none, we'll move on to item number 2, found on page 6, fire apparatus ambulance. Chief?
The Warwick Fire Department review bid 2026-122, type 1 ambulance. And after carefully reviewing the bid submitted, we recommend awarding the bid to Northeast Rescue Vehicles of Syracuse, New York. Although Northeast Rescue Vehicles took complete exception to the bid specifications, we did have an opportunity to perform a detailed inspection of an identical ambulance to the one proposed in the bid response. The department feels strongly that this vehicle, while not meeting our exact specifications, will adequately meet the needs of the department without compromise. Additionally, while costing nearly $47,000 less than the next lowest bidder, the delivery time is also nearly 2 years sooner. The requested bid is for one 2025 Medics 170-inch MSV2 Ford FI50 4x4 Type 1 ambulance. The price includes the Stryker power load and stretcher, lettering to match department fleet and delivery, and payment is not due until delivery. The fire department's requesting spending authority for a one-time purchase in the amount of $386,545. Funding for the vehicle to become coming from the city's lease purchase account, 4990450.
And Chief, this was another item that, as a result of your due diligence going out for bid, this vehicle comes in close to $70,000 less than you had in the capital budget, right?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Capital budget was 450, so once again, I'm happy to hear that. Any questions, any other questions from members of the committee? Yes, Councilman Napa.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief. On just looking at the warranty for this, so you said that this purchase price includes the Stryker stretcher and the power load apparatus that lifts it into the truck. Are those two pieces of apparatus warrantied under electrical systems, or are those covered at all?
They're warrantied under Stryker.
Under Stryker.
Separate from the vendor who's bidding on the truck. That's a separate warranty from Stryker themselves.
Okay. So even though that Stryker lift system is installed in the floor of the box, it's warrantied separately from Stryker?
That's correct.
Purchase price is included here?
That's correct.
Perfect. Thank you.
And Chief, the same as the previous item, the pumper, we do not pay for this vehicle until it's actually received.
Until delivery, that's right.
And this price, it also includes all the bells and whistles, lights and, signs and whatever.
Sirens.
So funny with you guys.
The total package, it completes everything delivered.
Thank you, Chief, for that professional answer to a very professional question. I don't know if you want to talk to you now. Councilman Foley, go ahead.
And the delivery date on this, sir?
So this particular truck,
279 days, Chief. From
279
the time
days, which is a lot quicker than anything else that we've seen. So this is a stock truck coming off the assembly line, which is why they took so many exceptions to the specifications because of the because this is a stock truck coming off, not built to order.
Thank you.
Chief, I want to comment on another quick part of the conversation that we had when you were discussing this with me, with your colleagues. One of the points you had mentioned, you alluded to it a few minutes ago, was that it didn't have all of the specifications that we had asked for. And I'm glad that that direction has started moving where it is, because as I said that day, for me, it's not about a want, it's about a need. And in my experience on this city council, 13 years, I've seen oftentimes when, the wish list was much higher, the want was much higher than the need. So I'm not speaking for my colleagues, but I am speaking for myself as finance chair. Going forward, I will always continue to monitor what is the need versus the want. And once again, I think that, you guys followed through with that. So thank you. Any other questions from members of the committee? Councilman Muto.
Just a quick, I just want to emphasize the work that you guys did. Again, the want versus need and going outside of the box to come up and answer what your department needs, what our city needs, and really tried to stretch the dollar. So definitely appreciate that. And, you know, I will second what Chairman Lattiser said. It's very much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you.
Especially in these times.
Absolutely. Any other questions from members of the committee? Any questions from members of the council? Any questions from members of the public? Do we have any questions from members of the public? Hearing none, we'll move on to item number 3, found on page 11, Kilbert Street Drainage Project.
Good evening.
Good evening, Christy. Welcome.
Public Works is requesting to award the bid for the Kilbert Street Drainage Project to D'Amber Construction in the amount of $198,000. It's a one-time purchase, so there's no contract period necessary. And this is to install a drainage pipe and a catch basin in Kilbert Street to alleviate some of the flooding that happens over there.
To alleviate the flooding, is that what you said?
Yes.
And that's been a huge problem over there, right?
Yes.
And short of doing this is doing nothing, then the flooding is just going to continue to occur.
Correct.
Okay. Do we have any questions from members of the committee? Councilman Muto, start your clock, please.
No, he has a question.
I'm sorry, Councilman Foley.
I'm done.
All right, give me a second.
Did you start your clock?
I did. I saw. Good afternoon. Good evening. What will be repaved once this is done from where to where on Kilbert Street? Do we know?
I believe that Eric can answer that question for you. We are aware that it does require some paving.
And just for the public record, the reason I'm asking, in my 5 years when I was on public safety and we had claims, we got a rash of claims from that street because of the potholes and the damage that had been done because of the flooding. Director.
Eric Earls, Public Works. So when we're done with that, we'll pave Jefferson Boulevard down around the corner. And I'm not sure if we'll go down the hill, but certainly to the turn that takes you to Proclamation. We're going to assess whether or not we need to go down the hill, but right now that's we're not anticipating having to do that.
Completion date? Do we have an idea?
No. You know, once it's awarded, if it's awarded this evening, we'll work with D'Amber on the schedule. But unlike a lot of subsurface work, we probably won't need to let this settle the typical 90 days. So we'll be able to, we anticipate paving it this paving season, which usually pushes us into November at the latest, but that's kind of the schedule working. That's the window.
Thank you.
Director, is there any utility work that could be done there at the same time?
No, all the utility out there is relatively new. So okay. Plastic, gas main, the utilities out in the road are a problem. That's one of the reasons this is kind of a complicated drainage, which is why we couldn't do it in-house. There's gas lines on both sides of the road. There's the electric substation, which has a duct that comes up from the substation and actually crosses the street. So this drainage will have to maneuver that. Again, that's why we needed to go out to bid. A typical drainage job like this we could do in-house. But because of all the utilities, we could have done it, but it would have taken longer, and this is all we would have been doing for a month. So that's why we needed to go out to bid for it. But yeah, a lot of utilities.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Councilman Ricks.
Thank you. Not intending to jump ahead of anyone on the committee, of course. A few questions. What's the criteria to decide whether to take on a particular drainage project or not?
You mean to go out to bid or do it in-house?
Yes, we can start with that.
It's relatively subjective. you know, you look at the different criteria and whether or not we can do it in-house, and this one we felt like we couldn't.
And it's phrased here as a new drainage line and catch basin. Is there any existing drainage line, catch basin in that general area?
I'm trying to think of, opposite the new development, there's a dry well. That's the only drainage on the entire street. So that works during smaller storm events, but eventually gets inundated and it puddles on that side. There's no drainage at all on the other side, so you always have a puddle on that side of the street.
And I imagine with the new development, that's an increase in the amount of impermeable surface, so that tends to cause flooding to be worse, street flooding, ever since the new development went in?
Actually, no, it's actually the opposite. They've done an excellent job with their stormwater management on that site. We're actually dumping water from the street into their facility, so this will help mitigate that as well.
How severe are the problems as to the homeowners taking in that additional floodwater?
Well, most of the area right now, it happens in a section of that development that hasn't been occupied yet.
Okay, so have there been any complaints from actual residents, or is it more just the developer expressing concerns about the floodwater?
Yeah, I mean, we've been in regular contact with the developer about the condition of the road and the situation out there. So, yeah, I mean, it's mostly working with the developer.
And along those lines, what's the criteria here? I'm not talking the criteria of deciding whether to do it in-house or go out to bid, but the criteria to decide whether it's a severe enough issue to bother addressing with new drainage line and time, labor, materials, etc., versus just shrugging one's shoulders and saying, you know, we see that there's a potential issue there, but it's not worth the cost.
Well, as Councilman Foley referenced, we're inundated, but there are a lot of claims that come from that section of Kilvert. So we've acknowledged that we need to pave the road. We shouldn't pave the road until we fix the drainage, or the road's just going to fall apart, right? Because there's always going to be standing water at this location. And so without fixing the drainage, you shouldn't pave the road. And if you don't pave the road, we're going to continue to get pothole claims and other types of claims out there. So that was the rationale.
So how many feet of road have to fall apart in order for, I'm not talking necessarily linear feet, but basically if you have a road that's X feet curb to curb, and then that road loses, say, is it like 10% or more, or less than 10% of the road has to fall apart before stormwater drainage is addressed?
No, that's a subjective, you know, you can't put a number on it like that, because again, you had to take in things like traffic volume, you know, the accessibility through that location, claims that you get, utility work. There's no hard number.
So if it's a low traffic street, we might allow 25% of the road to just fall by the wayside, completely waste away and not bother with it, or?
Well, I mean, that's not really a fair way to assess it. We never just let it waste away, but it will be a lower priority.
When we're talking priorities, about how long would it take if, hypothetically, we were talking about a situation where one or more homeowners were experiencing regular flooding into their residences as a result of stormwater coming from city streets?
I don't know how to answer that. I understand that you're having drainage issues in Norwood and you're frustrated that we haven't gotten to them, but we are going to get to them. So if that's the direction we're going, we'll get to it. But we don't have hard and fast numbers about what percentage of road needs to be this or needs to be that. It's a very subjective decision with a lot of different variables. If there are issues of concern, we try and get to them. Charlotte Drive is one. Panto, we have drainage issues. There are drainage issues all over the city, and we try and prioritize them to you know, kind of chip away, similar to Rhode Island Energy. You know, they knock out the one, they address the ones that are going to get more people online first. We try and address the ones that, you know, are affecting more people first. So, you know, that's one of the things we look at. Also, you know, a lot of other variables like cost too.
So I think on some of these items, and I put myself in the same framework, we're kind of deviating, we are deviating from the substance of the bid. So I would just ask everyone, let's just kind of reel it in and stay within the context of the item.
So
as I said, thank you.
So to be clear, for OMA purposes, I don't want to ask about any projects other than this particular one that's in front of us. So I am curious, though, how long was this issue known about? How long were there complaints about flooding onto private properties before it reached the level of being made a priority in order for it to come before us?
We've been looking at this project for for about 2 years. You know, we had to come up with a design, and then once we did that, we looked at whether or not we could do it in-house. But yeah, it's been about 2 years.
How complicated is the design process on something like this?
Actually, like I said, because of all the existing utilities, it was considerably more complicated than a drainage project that incorporates installing one catch basin, tying in an existing catch basin, and then, you know, running, I forget what it was, a couple hundred feet of pipe. But because of all the utilities, the design became a lot more complicated.
Once again, let's keep on the topic. Do we want to spend $198,000 for this drainage project? The questions pertaining to the project itself are welcome. Other than that, let's not continue to drift off course.
Thank you, Chair. I think that there is a clear need for this work to be done. I have no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman Muto, did you have a question?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right. Eric, that priority list that you mentioned, if you could send that off to us, a copy of that priority list, I think that would be helpful and maybe, you know, keep us from having to go through this.
I can certainly send you a list of the drainage jobs that we're looking at.
Okay, thank you. All right, moving on. Item number four, purchase three. Oh, I'm sorry. Any other questions from members of the council? Do we have any questions from members of the public? Are there any questions from members of the public? Hearing none, we will move on to item four, 2026-135, and that is found on page 20. Welcome back, Commander.
Good evening, Deputy Sullivan for the Police Department. The Police Department is seeking a 56-6 exception to bid to purchase various police vehicles from McGovern Municipal HQ under the Greater Boston Police Council Master Price Agreement. The vehicles include two 2024 Ford Police Interceptors and one 2024 Dodge Durango Police Model SUV. The total cost for the three vehicles is $180,000, $186,120. And that would be a lease purchase agreement.
So, Chief, Commander, sorry, why didn't you guys go out for bid for these three vehicles?
Well, for these three vehicles in particular, this is where they're 2024 model year, so we're close to being two model years moved on from that figure. Every year there's approximately about a 5% increase in the cost of the vehicles to begin with, coupled with we're getting discounts on these three vehicles, each of them. So one of the discounts for one of the vehicles is $4,500, another is $3,500, and the third vehicle is $1,500. It's $9,500 total for the three vehicles.
And why can't you use three utility vehicles at $49,600 versus one of those and a Dodge Durango and a police interceptor?
So these three vehicles are available on the lot and happen to be what's available with discount pricing right now. Our fleet manager does an excellent job trying to seek out these vehicles where there's a price advantage to be gained.
So does that dealership have three Ford Interceptor police utility vehicles?
Not at this pricing.
$50,000?
Not at this pricing. They may have the 2025 model year police interceptor utilities, but not the not at this pricing at this discount.
So these three vehicles essentially are leftovers. That's why you're getting them for the numbers you're getting them?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what a bid cannot do for you. Like if we went out to bid right now, we're going to be looking at 2026 model year vehicles. There's okay. not even a VIN number assigned to the vehicle yet. It's not in production. And we may wait 6 to 8 or even longer for that vehicle to be manufactured. And I believe, I don't know if it's DPW or who it was a year or two ago, they were on a list or their bidder was on a list to have their vehicle manufactured. And the manufacturer just shut down production for that model year and sent the bid back to us. So that's a real possibility. We're at the mercy of the manufacturer. So that's another issue with the bidding. So these and three vehicles are available right now for immediate delivery.
Okay.
At discounted pricing.
And you have this covered in your capital budget?
Yes.
Okay. And does this price include lights and sirens and lettering and everything of the kind?
Yes, they're all outfitted with lighting.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions or further questions from members of the committee? Do we have any questions from members of the council? Any questions from members of the public? Do we have any questions from members of the public? Hearing none, we'll move on to item number 5, 2025-087, found on page 35. It is cellular phone service for the city.
Good evening, Phil Carlucci, IT director. This is a request under City Ordinance 612 to increase the amount and extend the end date for cellular services, bid 2025-087. I'd like to increase the amount by $120,000, bringing the two-year total to $230,000. I would also like to extend the through date to 12/31/2026. This would be for Verizon Wireless Services, who the city uses for its cell services.
And this is nothing that we can pick or choose on, right? This is something that is necessary to do.
The service is necessary. I would like, if time were to permit, effort were to permit, cellular services is a little different than desk phone services. Desk phone services, they own the phone numbers, and you can try to keep them the same, but it's quite the effort. Cellular, you can port numbers to another carrier. Verizon does give the state and the city very favorable rates. The effort to switch this to a different carrier would be significant. At some point in time, I think it'd probably be necessary to at least test out what that significance would be willing. As you know, with your personal cell phone carriers are always willing to give the new customer some phenomenal deal to get them to switch over because they know what a effort it is to switch once mm-hmm. you've done that.
So in the absence of doing that because of time, this is pretty much the cause that we're dealt.
This is. And a lot of it, just to make sure we understand, it's not just cell phones. This also includes data plans we carry for the police in their cars, some spot plans we have on Wi-Fi services as well.
And this pretty much covers every department in the city, right?
It does cover every yeah. department in the city.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Any questions from members of the council? Do we have any questions from members of the public? Are there any questions from members of the public? Hearing none, we'll move on to item number 6, found on page 41. It is paramedic training program.
Good evening. Alan Govea, Assistant Chief from the Fire Department. The fire department is seeking a 56-6 exception to bid to send 22 of our firefighters to paramedic training. We're seeking the award to purchase, to award the purchase to Educational Resource Group in East Providence in the amount of $102,740. In July of 2025, the department was awarded a $1 million federal assistance grant, AFG grant. In this grant was funding to send 22 of our current firefighters holding an EMT cardiac license to a paramedic pathway or bridge program. The program is a shortened and less costly version of the full paramedic certification course. This is because they already are advanced life support providers. This just brings them up to the next level. Upon seeking pricing and availability within Rhode Island, only Educational Resources Group offers a certified and credentialed program. Students are required to complete a CAA-HERP accredited program to test for the National Registry certification and to obtain State of Rhode Island licensure. The cost of the program is $4,670 per student, a total cost of $102,740 for 22 students. Due to the sole source nature of the specialized training in Rhode Island, this is the best, it's the best interest in, to the city and the department to select this vendor for the award. If approved, the funds for the program will be expended from budget code 3680455 FEMA AFG grant fiscal year 23. In an amount not to exceed $102,740 as a one-time purchase. And these expenses are reimbursed through the FEMA AFG grant.
And at this time, Chief, do you have 22 firefighters identified that qualify for this AMT, cardiac, et cetera, et cetera?
We have more that expressed interest. We have to cut it off at 22.
Okay. Do we have any questions from members of the committee? Yes, Councilman Napa.
Thank you, Chief. Is this, when we send our firefighters here for the training, given how your shifts rotate, is the rotating schedule going to pose any issue with them being available for this training classes?
No, so this grant was $1 million. We used 720,000 of it to purchase Scott packs. That left us around $380,000 left in the grant to fund this program. What we're asking for tonight, this $102,000, is just to pay for the program. The balance of that $380,000 in federal funds will pay for coverage or salary to send the firefighters to class. So when they have to go to their classes, if they're on duty, they'll just go on duty and we'll backfill them using funding from the grant to pay for their overtime. So they will be able to go to all of the classes and their clinicals through this grant.
So this, the program will generate overtime, but it's going to be covered through the grant. So
correct,
there'll be no cost directly to the city.
Correct.
Or a reimbursable cost, rather.
Correct. It will be reimbursed through the AFG grant.
Okay. And relative to upgrading our personnel to paramedic, are the trucks fitted for to provide medic services?
They are. Our five rescues, frontline rescues, were licensed and certified on November 1st to the paramedic level. So we currently have 18... I think it's 18 paramedics now. We are licensed as a paramedic service, and they are operating as paramedics in the trucks.
Great. And I went through the contract, but now with a fine-tooth comb. By upgrading our personnel from AEMTCs to paramedics, that does not come at any financial cost to the city from what
nope.
I saw.
Nope. Every firefighter on the job is an AEMTC or cardiac. Mm-hmm. And we do not pay stipends for additional training, so there will be no change in cost, personnel costs.
Okay. That's all. Thanks, Chief.
Okay.
Thank you, Councilman. Chief, you had discussed with me the time constraints for these 22 firefighters to attend this training. Could you just review that?
So the period of performance is coming up in July for this grant. It's a two-year period of performance. So what we're going to have to do in order to fit the end of this program in is we're going to have to ask for an extension from the federal government, from FEMA. Usually that's just a routine matter, a little bit of paperwork and an explanation why we need the extension. and they'll extend us usually 30, 60, or 90 days to complete the grant.
And also the hours that the firefighters will be attending this, days, evenings, weekends, overtime, whatever.
Yeah, so there are a few hundred hours of training. What the grant covers and what we'll be paying is when they're in class, when they're in clinicals, we will not be covering that time. That'll be on their own time. Mm-hmm. And there's also a weekly online training that they have to do, 4 to 6 hours a week online training. We will not be compensating them for that when they're doing that time. So in all, the number of hours that they do for this training, they're going to be getting paid or covered for a small percentage of the total hours that they'll be doing.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from members of the committee? Any? Councilman Napa.
Councilman.
Chief, I'd imagine that the program has clinical partners for these firefighters.
Yep. Yeah, most of our clinical time will be done through Kent. That's where our medical director is, and they were very, very amenable to helping us get all our clinical time done.
And then just one last question. I know that our firefighters are very dedicated. If they choose to withdraw from the program for whatever reason, personal, medical, can you substitute someone else in, or is there a thought behind any of that?
There will be a point of no return where we're too deep into the program to substitute somebody else in. But that's up to the director of the program. They run the program. Once they start the program, it's out of our hands. The director of the program has full authority to decide whether somebody's progressing or not and whether we can substitute somebody in or not. Okay. But we did sit down with every firefighter that was interested. We were very clear on the requirements for this program and what's expected of them and what we'll be providing them.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman Muto.
Thanks. You mentioned this program is part of the FEMA grant. At the end of all this, is there going to be any revenue or money left from that grant to be used?
For the grant, no. We'll spend every dollar of this grant.
Damn, that's a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll spend every the full $1 million of this grant between the Scott Pax and this paramedic program.
All right, thank you.
Sorry.
Hold that thought, Councilman, for budget time.
There you go.
Any questions from members of the council? Any questions from members of the council? Do we have any questions from members of the public? Are there any questions from members of the public? Hearing none, we will move on to item. Thank you, Chief. We'll move on to item number 7, 2026-043, found on page 45.